desire and interest in your prayers this afternoon as we continue the message of this morning, Who Shall Abide in Thy Tabernacle? Again, I will remind us that the question that David posed is relevant to us, and it has relevancy because it touches on our conduct every day, really, and how we relate with people and how we interact, the decisions that we make. So we're going to go ahead and pick right on up with the fourth verse. In answer to the question he asked, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? In the 15th Psalm. Now in the fourth verse, it says, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. That was basic answer. Lord, who's fit to, who's part of your people? Who's in your kingdom? People that, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned. Now, specifically what he's speaking about here is that someone that is not a respecter of persons. If someone is living an unrighteous life, you don't give them respect as if they're living righteously. And it means here that based on, you don't give them preference based on wealth, position, rank, or connection. That gets into political situation there too, doesn't it? People talk about people, someone playing politics. In other words, I'll deal with them based on who they're connected to. So if you're connected to a lot of people, then I'm not going to, I'll treat you differently. And if you don't have any family connections and you don't have a lot of people in the congregation or in the church, then I'm going to treat you differently. He said, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned. In other words, if someone is not living a righteous life, it doesn't matter what your last name is, it doesn't matter who your parents are, doesn't matter where your, what your background is, that we're going to consider the fruit that's in your life and we're going to make decisions according to that. And you know, that's very different than the natural inclination of people. We live in a time in a society, and I think it's probably always been this way, that people will deal with someone that they're not connected with differently than if it's a family member or it's someone that's been a friend for a long time. I'm going to treat them differently. And I'm not going to make the same decisions. But here he's speaking about not excusing and not justifying wrong because of the connection. Have you ever heard someone say, don't touch my children? You ever heard that phrase? You know, you can talk about what someone else is doing and you can talk about what this one's doing, but don't you dare talk about my children. Don't touch my children. The scripture here says, in whose eyes a vile person is condemned, basically is what he's saying. In other words, I'm not going to justify wrong in my family. And I will personally make a commitment to you all today. I will not cover wrong in my family. I will not justify it. I will not excuse it. And it's not just future tense. I do not excuse it. If there's someone that I love with all of my heart does wrong, they're doing wrong. And I'm not going to excuse it. I'm not going to justify it. I'm not going to cover for them and say, well, you know, they did it because of this. If there may be reasons, but if they're wrong, they're wrong. And we need to treat people and treat life. At work, at school, on the job, in congregation, we need to not cover and justify wrong. Folks, sin is sin. And I think as a people today, more and more of us have, whether it's in the congregation, whether it's in our families, whether it's at work, there are more and more people that we are closely connected with that are doing wrong. And when we will begin to compromise is when we begin to justify and excuse the wrong that's in their life. And I begin to say, well, but if you understand where they came from, folks, sin is sin. Jesus didn't excuse it, but yet he offered hope to the sinner. That's why he told the woman caught in adultery, he said, I don't condemn you, but go and don't sin anymore. That ought to be the hope that as a congregation, as a people in our families, that's the hope we offer. That the Lord can forgive and He can restore. But folks, someone's never going to make their peace with God if we justify the wrong that's in their life. And someone said, well, if you love me enough, you'd overlook it. Folks, Jesus never overlooks sin. He never excused it. He never looked it over. But He loved them and He gave them an opportunity for restoration. And that is what our job as well. Again, folks, this is Old Testament teaching. How much more has been elevated for us in the New? Who's in God's church? Who's in the kingdom of God? In whose eyes a vile person is condemned. I'm not going to excuse. I'm not going to justify. But He went on to say this. But He honoreth them that fear the Lord. In other words, we're going to show respect and honor to those that are living right. We're going to give honor and respect to those that have a desire to do right. We're going to give honor and respect to those that are doing God's will. Because see, here's the situation. Sometimes you will find people at odds one with another, won't you? So you say, well, take a side. What side are you going to come down on? You say, I'm not taking sides. Well, you better take a side. You better take a side for truth. You better take a side for wrong. It's not that if you stand for truth, you're against someone, folks. That's a trick of the enemy to say that if you stand for truth, then you're against the sinner. Not so. There are people that I love with all my heart and I give my life for them today. I love them, but I will not support the sin in their life. And I won't justify it, but at the same time, to take a stand against the sin doesn't mean I'm against them. I do anything I could for their salvation. I do anything I could. It's what the Lord's taught. It's what David is talking about here. And we're going to show honor and respect for those that are serving the Lord. And it seems like sometimes, and it comes in all forms, again, at school, work, among God's people, that it depends on who you're connected to, on how we deal with one another. Well, here's someone, say, Brother Cook, can I use you for an example? Say, Brother Cook, and he's not the unthankful, I have confidence in Brother Cook's life. But say he comes along and he goes into sin. And say Brother Cook has family in the congregation. And I say, well, if I address this and deal with the situation, I know Brother Cook's family won't like me anymore. They're not going to support me anymore, so I'm not going to take a stand against what he's doing. We say, well, Brother Michael, that's wisdom. You don't want to step in a hornet's nest there. You're gonna make God cause some trouble. Just let things go. No, the job of the ministry is to declare where wrong is wrong, preach the truth, and sometimes people won't like you for it. So where are you gonna come down? Well, I'm neutral. There is no neutrality in serving God. You say, well, I'm not siding with anybody. Don't side with someone, but side for truth. I'm not going to defend unrighteousness, but I am also going to honor and respect those that are fearing the Lord. Do we see how this applies in life in many situations? Well, that's my son. It's my son, and if he's doing wrong, he's doing wrong, folks. If it's my wife and she's doing wrong, that's what she's doing. You won't find me supporting it. You'll find me loving her and forgiving her and doing everything I can to restore her. But I'm not going to get up and I'm not going to say, well, just understand why she's doing what she's doing and it's okay. No, folks, sin is sin and wrong is wrong. And too often we find people playing politics with right and wrong. Politics and right and wrong. Well, they're a trustee, or they're teaching, or they're a song leader, they're teaching Sunday school. So don't deal with the situation, because there's going to be some negative fallout. When we begin to take that mindset is when we begin to compromise as a family, as a people, as a congregation, when we won't stand up for what's right and true. And that means sometimes there's going to be questions, and sometimes there's going to be some difficulties, and sometimes people won't understand why you do what you do. But our obligation, folks, if we're going to abide in the tabernacle of God, is don't excuse a vile person, but show respect and honor and reverence to those that are doing God's work and standing for righteousness. Is that too straight? He went on to say then, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. Children, young people, what he's talking about here is telling the truth. Follow through on your commitments. And he said, he that sweareth to his own hurt. In other words, someone that has given their word and then later they see, if I obey, if I do what I said I'm going to do, it's going to hurt me. It's going to hurt me, and so then I change. That's what that's talking about, keeping your word. Someone said, well, I didn't promise. Young people, listen. You don't have to promise something. If you say something, you're obligated to it. God's people are a people that you ought to be able to trust in what they say. Now, I will say, and I'm going to add this, there are probably all of us have forgotten something. Maybe said, oh, I'll bring this to you. And then the time comes, it's like, I forgot. You know, I was going to bring it to you, and I'm sorry, I'll get that. That's not a lie. You understand that? That's not a lie. There are also times of misunderstanding. There are times that you can have an understanding of something, and someone said, that's not correct. It's like, I didn't understand that. I'm sorry. It wasn't a violation of conscience. It wasn't a violation that you lied or did something. You didn't do what you said you'd do. It was a misunderstanding. So if we don't give each other room in those areas, folks, we're all going to be marked down as doing wrong because we're human. And we misunderstand sometimes. And we get our wires crossed sometimes. But what he's talking about here is when you make a commitment to someone and you see it's going to hurt you to follow through with it, he said, don't change. If you're going to abide in the tabernacle of God and you give your word on something, even at your own detriment, you're going to keep your word. Shared before, I remember, and I know I've shared it with you all before, but I remember I told someone I'd sell them a vehicle. And I told them, I said, I'll sell it to you for so many thousands of dollars. And then I got another, got a little bit more information and realized I could have made $2,000 more on it. I hadn't signed, there was no contract signed, and I could have just told them, say, I changed my mind. But I'd given my word. And I told my wife, I said, I want it to be that if they walk in the chapel, they won't say, you told me you'd sell it and you didn't do it. My word was worth more than that. My word was worth more than $2,000 more. And so I let him go. I go ahead and gave it to him. I said, you know, I found this out and I really, it's really worth more than that. And I wish you, you know, bump it up. But I said, I told you I'd give it to you for this. And they took it for what I had originally said. They weren't going to give me any more. But folks, that's a small thing. That's a small thing. But when you give your word, children, young people, when you tell someone something, Christians keep their word. Christians don't lie, period. Lying is sin. And if someone intentionally violates their word, that is sin. It's just like going out and committing adultery. Folks, adultery is sin. Fornication is sin. Drunkenness is sin. Lying is sin. It's works of darkness. It's the works of the flesh. And so then when he said, "Hear he that sweareth his own hurt and changeth not," I think of another illustration. I remember Brother Darrell Smith. He lived in Shawnee, Oklahoma, and he told me one time, coming to Monarch, one of those little towns right before you get to Neosho, after you get off the interstate, there's two little towns you go through, I think, and I don't remember which one it was, but he got stopped by the police. He got a ticket, and I don't think the officer was real nice. And Brother Darrell said, "I will never drive through your town again." And he wasn't being ugly, he said, "I won't drive through your town again." So every year after that, he had to stop on the outskirts of that town and let his wife drive through town. Because he gave his word. He told the officer, "I will not drive through your town again." And so he told me, he said, from then on, he had to stop and change drivers. Let his wife drive through town, then they'd switch again. Do you know, I respect that. He gave his word. And you could say, well, it really doesn't matter. It matters because he gave his word. Now, there might have been opportunity if he wanted to call up the police station and said, "You know what, I told the officer this, and I just want to know if it's all right with you if I drive through your town." There's a place to come back and renegotiate. There's a place to come back and said, "You know, I gave you my word, and I'm going to keep it, but something came up, and I was wondering if it would be all right, if we made some adjustments here." That's okay. But he that sweareth to his own hurt, at my own detriment, I'm going to keep my word. Folks, our word is valuable. There are people today that have told so many lies, I can't believe a word they say today. I know more than one person like that. I want to believe them. But when they tell me something, I don't know whether it's true or not. And I have to always operate as if it's not true. That's a sad place to be. God's people, that ought never to be the case. You give your word, you're going to keep it. Who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Someone that hears their obligations. went on to say, he that putteth not out his money to usury. You children and young people know what usury is? Usury, in essence, is interest. Oppressive interest. It's not talking about you can't, if someone said, hey, could I borrow so much money and I'll pay you 5% interest? That's all right. That's not usury. But usury is taking advantage of someone else's misfortune. I'm selling flashlights at, you know, some of you children heard the story, the tornado comes and I'm selling flashlights for $5 and now I'm going to mark them up to $20 a flashlight. Because people are coming in and they need them. So you're taking advantage of people. That's what usury is. And I'm going to go a step further, and this isn't political, but all of these little storefront places that you can borrow money in town, you know, we loan money to anybody, that's usury. 20% interest. 25, 30, some of them go up, I don't know how high they go. Interest in a short amount of time. I'll give you $100 and next week you owe me $125 and I'm going to hold your car title and if you don't pay it, your car's mine. People that are desperate for something, I need my drugs or I need this or that, and they go in and do that and someone just made $3,000 or $4,000 off a couple hundred bucks. That's usury. It's wrong. So he said, you don't take advantage of people. You don't use what you have to take advantage of someone when they're down. If someone needs some help, there's a place to help them out. And there's a place to help them out reasonably. But don't take advantage of other people's misfortune. That's what he means here in essence. Putteth not his money out to usury. He said, nor taketh a reward against the innocent. In other words, we don't see it as much maybe in our daily dealings, but it still happens. It happens in politics. It happens maybe more than what we know, and especially in some of the countries I've been in. Talk about not taking bribes to pervert justice. In other words, you come before the judge, and you have two parties. And if you can slip the judge some money so he'll rule in your favor, that's wrong. That's what he's talking about. Well, we may not be to the judge, but what do you think about connections? Again, we come back down to connections. You're my friend, side with me. We're going to enter a meeting and we're going to talk about a problem. And we've got a connection. It may be a family connection. It may be we're on the same team, or we have the same background, or we're from the same, you know, philosophical thinking. And just be sure you rule in my favor. Playing politics. Circumventing justice because of connection. These things ought not ever to be named among God's people. And he went on then in conclusion, he said, he that doeth these things shall never be moved. Basic principles of morality that he's talked about here. He said, if you do these things, you'll never be moved. In other words, your character is going to be kept intact. Your character is upright. It's straightforward. An upright and honest man, and when there are winds and difficulties that come along, if you have lived like this, you won't be moved. You'll be steadfast, regardless of what people say and regardless of what people think, because your integrity is intact. Folks, your integrity, and children, you young people, your integrity, it's talking about your honesty and your uprightness. It's valuable. Don't trade it for anything. Don't trade it for anything. But most of all, this afternoon, we will not be moved because we have Jesus Christ in our life. When we've been born again, when we're serving the Lord and letting Christ rule in our life, that will bring forth these virtues that we've talked about today. That is what will enable us, and we can go through some very difficult times. And we can come through with our conscience clear because we've been doing what the Word of God teaches. We will not be swayed or moved from walking in righteously before the Lord. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? I want to live, and I would that each one of us have a purpose to live this way, that when the Lord comes back, he would say, well done, thou good and faithful servant.